We think right now is a great time to buy. Deal volume is picking up. There is a lot of capital flowing in, and we're seeing this as a generational buying opportunity. We are super excited about the next couple of years. We'll keep putting deals together in front of you guys and heavily investing in our own capital alongside all of you as we continue to present opportunities to you all.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com.
First and foremost, I want to welcome you all to the halfway point of 2024. I can't even believe we're in June of 2024. These are our biannual state of the markets that we like to do at RSM Property Group. And with me, as always, is my trusty business partner, Ben. How are you doing, mate?
Doing good, Reid. Thanks, everyone, for joining. I always like to remind you that we are genuinely live. So you might hear us stumble on our words. You might see me fumble with some of the slides every now and again. And we promise the Q&A will be completely unscripted at the end. So this is going to be 100% candid. And with that, let's get into it, Reid.
Quick warm welcome to returning investors. I hope you're all doing well, as I mentioned. And then a big hello to any new investors that have come across this webinar. We are going to take some time to recap and get into what we're going to cover in today's webinar. So first and foremost, we're going to do a quick intro and executive summary for those people who don't know who we are at RSM Property Group. And then we're going to get into the welcome and the, you know, talk about the 6 monthly installment of the state of the market and what has happened over the last 6 months. And the purpose of this webinar is for us to use this as a company to share our thoughts on the current state of the market, along with how we are responding to many of the challenges, but also many of the opportunities we see in today's market. After a brief introduction, we're going to jump into the webinar itself, starting with a brief recap from our last webinar back in December, give some commentary on the economic current economic status and the outlook, and then give a deep dive market insight and update and how we as RSN are moving forward. And then that's going to take about 30 minutes. And at the end of that, we're going to do a live Q&A. For those people who don't know who we are, we have been in existence for over 10 years, and we have purchased a total of over $830 million worth of multifamily real estate across the United States. Now, we've purchased about 25 properties, and that's about 2.5 deals a year. So we've been very methodical with our growth, and we have focused primarily on value-add multifamily across growth markets here in the United States, specifically around the Smile or the Sun Belt states. We look for opportunities to double people's money in a 5 to 7 year period. We typically hold our assets between 3 and 7 years, I should say, and target project IRRs above 17%. So if you are new, that's a bit of a background on who we are. We've been doing this for, as I said, over a decade. We are tried and true operators, and we have a great track record. But that being said, Ben, let's dive into the nuts and bolts of this webinar. And I'm going to hand it over to you to talk about what we've done since the last webinar.
Awesome. Thanks, Reid. So look, in our last webinar, we covered a lot of ground. And one of the key points we made, not only in our last webinar, but since we started doing these webinars in 2022, is that it's going to be a bumpy ride for investors. And it certainly has been. The last 2 years have probably been the worst for the multifamily industry and the wider commercial real estate industry since the 2008 crash. And we're not out of the woods yet. But downswings happen in every market, and they're always followed by recoveries. So let's talk about it. We covered 4 key items in our last webinar: the length of the economic growth on record, inflation, interest rates, and the resulting slowdown in the multifamily market. Now, speaking to the length of economic growth, in 2010 to 2020, it was the longest period of economic growth in the history of the United States. Well into 2022, it was an amazing run for the multifamily market, and the correction we've experienced over the last 2 years is arguably a quote-unquote healthy thing, shaking out the weak businesses and weak investments and setting the stage for the next phase of the cycle. What this period of sustained growth means for the rest of the economy, the stock market, and the everyday people of America is another story. Right now, the stock market is ripping higher and economic data appears strong, but we're going to talk about recession risk later in this presentation. And inflation, starting in 2020, we saw inflation surge to the highest rate since the 1980s. This was also the quickest increase in inflation in modern history too. It peaked in mid-2020 and dropped down to the mid to low 3% range. However, this is higher than the Fed's 2% inflation target. And this is what's been referred to as sticky inflation. As we've said before, this inflation has a real world impact on food prices, energy prices, and everyday Americans get hit the hardest. As multifamily operators, we see this manifest in the form of increased delinquency as tenants prioritize other needs before timely and full payment of rent. Now, the other big story over the last couple of years and now is interest rates. To combat this inflation, starting in early 2022, the Fed funds rate climbed from 0% to 5.25% today. This was the quickest increase in interest rates in modern history, caught the entire commercial real estate industry completely by surprise, caused a lot of the challenges that have come about from that. And since our last state of the market had predicted 3 interest rate cuts in 2024. Today, it looks like if we get just one, that would be a win. However, the futures market, where people bet on this with massive sums of real money, is giving better odds for more than one hike. So you've got 5% of people basically saying rates will stay flat, 28% saying we'll get one cut, 45% saying we'll get two, and 20% saying we might get 3. So we'll see what actually happens in real life. But in the long term, this is the Federal Reserve dot plot. These are the expectations from the Fed members themselves. So the Fed and the market are predicting that rates are going to settle somewhere over the next few years in the low 3s to the high 2s range. And that's going to apply upward pressure on multifamily asset prices and generally help the multifamily and commercial real estate markets. Now, here's something we want to put to you. Here's an insightful chart that we want to share. When calculating inflation, shelter at over 36% is the largest component of the consumer price index. The problem is that the Fed uses data that is 12 to 18 months lag from real time. And you can see it clearly here in the chart, comparing the real-time Zillow and apartment.com data peaking almost a full 2 years before the BLS data shows that same peak. If the Fed were using live data, inflation would actually be close to 2.3%. And there would be a strong case to make cuts sooner. Now, this isn't secret knowledge or a conspiracy. The Fed knows this, and they make their judgments accordingly. I dare say, though, that if the general public knew this, there would be a bit more pressure on the Fed to begin a cutting cycle sooner. Now, what this all manifests in is something we've talked about a lot on past webinars, so I'm going to give an abridged summary, but it's the big slowdown in multifamily market. When interest rates shoot up, multifamily assets drop in value. It really is that simple. This meant that over a few short months, once priced at, for example, $30 million, were now being priced in the mid to low 20s. Naturally, sellers weren't willing to take such a massive hit, so most opted to hold on to their assets and wait for better market conditions. This absolutely killed deal volume because the only people selling were those forced to sell. You can see that in the red circle here on the graph. Somewhat counterintuitively, prices took a hit, but at least initially, it wasn't as much as the underwriting math would dictate because fewer deals were being chased by the same number of buyers and many buyers simply overpaid. Thankfully, market volume appears to be picking up. Perhaps it's because operators are running out of time and they're being forced to sell. You know, whatever the case, you know, as Reid will mention, we're still seeing a lot of competition on marketed properties with, you know, as many as 30 bids on, you know, certain properties that go live. What we can say is that rates coming down will certainly help with transaction volume and the market in general. And what we can say is at RSN, we responded to this situation over the past 2 years by holding firm on our underwriting standards. And this has meant fewer deals in 2022 and 2023, impacting short-term profits and business operations. But it's ensured that our portfolio and our investor base are in the strongest possible position today. And with that, let's transition to the present day. So let's talk about the economy briefly. And as we pointed out in our last webinar, it has been a doozy of the last 5 years in terms of high impact events hitting us. You know, we had COVID, which obviously blew up the world. We had the banking crisis with SVB. The Ukraine war persists. We had an election cycle and then everything that came along with that. And the Gaza war more recently. You know, what are the next 5 years going to bring? That's a big question. Is there going to be some stability that allows the economy to thrive? Or are there going to be more random black swan events knocking us off course? who knows? But what we're going to talk about today is a couple of things. We're going to talk about the election cycle and the impact on the economy. Now, we're apolitical in our view, and we're viewing the election purely through the lens of its impact on investing and the economy. We did write a really detailed article about how the election cycle impacts not only the economy, but stocks, real estate, and all sorts of aspects of the economy. And if you just go to rsmpropertygroup.com/election article, you can go into much more detail than we're going to be able to go into on this presentation. But we're going to cover a couple of talking points. The first one is the general tendency for businesses to hold off on making big decisions and big investments that could be impacted by the outcome of the election. Investors often hold back on investments until they see who wins and they understand the policies to expect over the next 4 to 8 years, or 4 years in this case. For what it's worth, we don't see our business plan changing significantly based on which candidate gets elected, but we do expect to see an increase in general investment and economic activity after the election is over. The second talking point that we'll speak to is that there's a common narrative that we keep hearing that the Fed likes to cut during the election cycle. However, the data shows that rates don't really seem to be impacted by the election cycle. You can see here it's somewhat evenly distributed. 2008 was obviously a financial crisis that saw cutting. There's certainly not a clear pattern of cutting that aligns with that narrative. So oddly enough, the data tends to show that the Fed is indeed politically independent, more so than not, at the very least on this specific claim. So we see rate activity being driven by the fundamentals rather than the political interests of the candidates. Now, with that, we're going to talk a little bit here about recession risk in the economy that we spoke about. Now, the back half of last year and earlier saw a lot of commentary about recession risk, talking about a hard landing, talking about a soft landing. And while it's fallen out of favor from the news cycle, the risk of a recession still looms large. And here's the latest analysis suggesting a 50% chance of a recession by May 2025. Now, of course, recessions aren't as fun as bull markets, but they're an important part of the cycle. So what's an investor to do? You know, selling all of your holdings because a recession might hit is not an optimal strategy. You know, no one can time the market that perfectly and certainly not consistently. But let's take a look at stocks. So as you can see, stocks typically take a dip around recessions, whether before, during, or after. And while the stock market and the economy aren't the same thing, they're obviously very heavily connected. And again, we don't recommend trying to time the market and selling your stocks, but we would certainly advocate for having a discussion with your financial advisor about whether or not your portfolio is well-balanced and in a good position to weather a future recession. Now, real estate, on the other hand, is less impacted than stocks during a recession. Excluding the 2008 recession that was explicitly caused by the housing market overheating and crashing, you'll note that home prices are not directly correlated to recession periods. It's not an absolute truth, and somewhat counterintuitively, you'll see that real estate spiked right after COVID, but they were unusual times in every sense of the word and not a reliable predictor of future recession activity. The key point we're really trying to make here is make sure you've got a balanced portfolio. You'll be better positioned to enjoy the upside when the economy does well and limit the downside when a recession hits. We can't control when a recession is going to hit, but we control how we handle our finances in that regard. For us as multifamily operators, all we can do is focus on sourcing and structuring deals that can thrive in any economic conditions, hedge as much risk as possible, and stay as conservative as possible. And with that, let's transition to the multifamily market update, where we're willing to be experts, stick our necks out, and make some confident predictions and commentary. I'll pass it back over to you, Reid.
Thanks, Ben, and great recap on the macro level. Now I'm going to dive into the multifamily market specifically. And we're not only going to be just referencing the public data and trends that are available on many different websites, we're also going to be speaking to what we're seeing at RSN in real time as we chat to brokers and investors and industry leaders as we're out talking at conferences and what is going on in that real time. And that's part of the reason why you join these 6 monthly calls. You don't want to wait for things to hit the headlines. You want to hear them true right now. So the first thing I'll say is that, like I've said in the last webinar, I'm sure a lot of you guys are investors in other multifamily deals, and I'm sure a lot of you are in deals that may be experiencing some distress right now. And I'm going to talk about that distress in the multifamily sector specifically in just a second. But let's first talk more about our predictions from the last webinar, the last state of the market that we did in December. And we gave an outlook on things to come in the multifamily industry in 2024. And by and large, most of them are true today. So the first thing is tighter lending and restrictive lending. Lenders have become more restrictive, with fewer lenders willing to make deals done today due to the higher interest rate environment. And local banks and bridge debt have been just too expensive in terms of their rates for them to even be considered at an option. And in our opinion, if you're even buying deals today, I wouldn't even go and consider bridge debt today. Now, this is par for the course, because these types of lenders, they rely on floating rate interest rate. They rely on taking a really, really nice spread over the SOFR curve. But given what has happened over the last 2 years, most deals that are being done today, they're just not willing to take that risk of that floating rate, given what we've all learned. We have solely been executing at RSN on agency deals, both with Freddie and Fannie Mae. And those two agencies have actually been pricing very, very competitively, with great options for affordable product, particularly in the value add space, and the ability to buy down your interest rates but create positive leverage from day one, which is still really, really good news. But I will say, no one is immune to the tighter lending environment, and both the agencies have started to really, really crack down on co-invest requirements for syndicated deals, which has, you know, has caused some headwinds, if you are not aware. Now, by and large, we are seeing that with the higher interest rate environments, that we are in more restrictive lending territory compared to, say, 2 or 3 years ago. But this is by no means the same restrictive lending territory we saw back in 2008 financial crash, where no one was lending. It's just a hurdle. It's a small hurdle, or it is a hurdle that we have to continue to deal with today. The second thing we spoke about in the last webinar is the risk of refinancing, and obviously the risk of loans being called due. Now, contrary to expectations, banks and lenders are generally willing to work with borrowers in today's environment. And the slow-moving train wreck we all thought that was going to be here by now, and I definitely called it last webinar, hasn't really occurred, at least not yet. And a lot of lenders have learned many valuable lessons from the 2008 global financial crisis. And there's just a lot more loan modifications, a lot more loan workouts that are being done today in order to keep that puck moving down the ice. But there isn't one operator who has been active over the past couple of years, both on the institutional and on the syndication side, that isn't probably dealing with at least one loan modification right now. However, in saying that, I do think, depending on the situation, we are actually seeing multiple operators with multiple issues in their portfolio starting to have to hand back the keys to the bank. I personally know of multiple operators that I've been contacted with off-market deals where the operator is contemplating walking away from the deal. Now, it may not be widespread just yet. It may not be in the headlines, but it's definitely occurring in real time today, and we need to talk about it. And these deals are where equity has been completely wiped out in these situations. And I'm going to comment on that a little bit more in a later section. Now, the fourth thing we talked about was that deals are struggling due to the high interest rates, right? Like, operators with floating rate debt are in distress as a result of higher debt services, which means those debt services are exceeding the income of the property, and this is causing distress. And operators really have two choices. One, do a capital call and raise more money and invest more money into a deal that might not be worth more than the loan. Or if they can't raise the debt, or they can't raise additional equity from investors, they have too many deals that are in distress at one time, which we're seeing as a common theme. Some operators are just throwing back the keys on those deals that, you know, aren't worth saving, or they have expiring debt due in a couple of months, or they need to buy a new rate cap, or they just can't raise the dollars from investors. So those are the deals that we're seeing in real time. So a lot of things we are seeing may not have hit the headlines, as I mentioned earlier, but that's part of the reason why you join these calls, so you can hear the real word on the street rather than waiting for the headlines to report what is going on. And I bet, and you can quote me on this, that in 6 months' time, we're going to be hearing a lot more headlines talking about what we're seeing today in real time. Now, we did mention on the last webinar that their transaction volume was down, right? It plummeted since late 2021. And that was in combination with higher interest rates, right? As interest rates jumped, as Ben mentioned, valuations have dropped. And many operators with expiring debt who are being forced to sell today are actually selling at massive discounts, often sometimes at par or below what the debt is actually worth on it. So they're having complete equity wipeouts. However, we are seeing deal volume pick up in the first 6 months of 2024. And the majority of these deals are as a result of the higher for longer interest rate environment. We have actually underwritten, I spoke to my analyst earlier, we've underwritten over 110 deals already in 2024 in the first 6 months. We didn't even underwrite 110 deals last year in 2023. So there's going to be more, there's more deal flow, which means there's going to be more deals to be had. So definitely keep your eyes peeled for, you know, deals as we launch them. Now, the final thing we'll talk about is the outlook on the multifamily loans. And there's a bit of a silver lining. And as mentioned earlier, we do expect lower interest rates to eventually come around. And this will help improve deal, not only deal volume, but the overall market performance. And I think a lot of people thought that by this time, June of 2024, that we would have had maybe one or two rate cuts, given what Jay Powell and his comments in December's Fed meeting. Now, however, he had to pivot, and that narrative has changed dramatically. And, you know, some people just can't hold on for much longer. And as Ben mentioned, if we get one rate cut this year, I think that will be a win. But 6 months ago, we thought that we would get two or three. Now, there is a large number of multifamily loans expiring over the next 3 years or sooner. And we're looking that we believe is going to cause even more distress over the next 6 to 12 months, above and beyond what we have already seen in the first 6 months of 2024. You know, will rates drop? Well, you know, we'll talk about more on that in a little bit later. But what we do want to pivot and talk a little bit more about is the fundamentals of multifamily real estate. We are huge believers that the fundamentals of multifamily remain strong. And looking at the data, there is continued pressure on affordability. There's continued pressure on supply and demand. And both of that is historically misaligned. Now, looking at this chart, we have clearly, there's a clear large deficit of the number of housing units needed to meet demand. Now, this chart is from 2022. However, we've gone further and done more research. And the numbers as of today in 2024, we require 1.7 million units per year to be built in order to match demand. Now, if you look at the all-time construction data, today we're only on pace to produce about 1.2 million units per year. And if you look at the delivery forecast specifically for multifamily over the coming years, for both multi and for single family units, we still see a significant shortage in that break even to even get to back to that target to hopefully ease affordability. Because affordability, let's face it, is at its all-time low. And according to this chart, the affordability today is worse than it was in 2008. So take that as you will, if that's canary in the coal mine. I'm not going to read too much into it, but affordability is a massive, massive problem and continues to be. We've also seen rents. And as we talk about the rents, because that's been a massive factor in, you know, the multifamily froth, so to speak, we saw that in COVID, rental rates spiked dramatically. And we spoke about this a lot in the previous webinars. And we saw some markets, Austin, Phoenix, just to name a few, in the 20-25% rental growth rate. And that was due to all the stimulus being pumped into the economy. And we've now seen a massive swing back, and we've seen negative rent growth in some markets. But our forecasts, and we believe in these forecasts, are saying that we're going to get back to some sort of more normalcy in that 2-3% range, similar to what we saw pre-COVID. Now, however, if you take a step back, one of the biggest fundamentals we all believe in and need to understand as investors is that as inflation continues to tick up, and we saw massive inflation recently, then rents will also increase. And if you look at the data from the past 70 years, overwhelmingly rent has continued to increase, and we don't see that stopping anytime soon. And don't take our word for it. You know, look at massive institutional players. They have announced, and that, you know, in the headlines, that they believe real estate pricing is now the right time to be buying. And looking at Blackstone, they're making massive bets on institutional quality multifamily opportunities, and they've spent over $10 billion acquiring multifamily just in 2024. So again, we also believe that we've bottomed out in terms of pricing for multifamily assets. Next slide, please, Ben. We don't think cap rates are going to continue to expand much beyond what we've seen today. Now, I'll give you some anecdotal evidence that when we're underwriting deals, we like to match and track cap rates and what things have been traded at again, so we can keep our finger on the pulse. And, you know, we've already underwritten over 110 deals this year alone. So we are seeing institutional quality assets continuing to trade in the high fours to low five cap rates. We're seeing 90s product trading in the low to mid five cap rates. We're seeing 80s vintage product in the high fives to low sixes. And we're seeing older vintage assets, you know, 70s, 60s product in the mid to upper sixes. But I don't think we'll see much more movement upwards from these numbers. And the reason is twofold. One, there's a lot of money on the sideline that needs to be placed by certain deadlines. A lot of big funds have to put money on the street. And because they haven't put money on the street in the last couple of years, because of the higher the interest rates environment and how quickly it ran up, they have mandates to get it on the street. The second thing is that money flocks to hard assets in high inflationary environments. And we're seeing that play out in real time. I was bidding on a relatively new deal, 2008 build in North San Antonio, which, you know, has a lot of supply in North San Antonio, New Braunfels. But it was a new vintage asset. Everyone wanted good quality product. There was over 35 offers on that. And I was just completely blown away by just how many people are still out there. The lane is really, really busy, which is, you know, a good thing. So we'd also like to mention that before, that there is still massive amounts of distress in mortgages, right? And if you look at this chart, commercial mortgage distress is up significantly from 2022. Multifamily is over 13% of all loans are in some sort of distress today. And we actually think that potentially could be more than what the data is actually saying. And we're paying close attention to this. As I mentioned earlier, we pay close attention to the expiring loans on the deals we're chasing. And we actually use that data from CoStar to reach out to these owners to see if they want to do a deal off market. But with that being said, we have to talk about a bit of the elephant in the room. That's the syndicated distress. This has obviously been a huge issue. And we've seen many headlines of syndicating groups starting to show really big signs of issues within their portfolio. Now, we think there will be more distress to come, like we've already mentioned, and we've seen that happen play out in real time in the first 6 months of 2024. We think the next 6 months are going to have the continued same trends. However, operators with good and long-term debt or operators that have been able to negotiate extensions in their loan are not willing to sell right now, and they're willing to ride out the market. As interest rates decrease, we do think asset prices will rebound. Now, if you look at the peak of 2021 before the crash, we saw the peak of guru activity, self-proclaimed gurus convincing their students to take on massive assets and operations while their backgrounds weren't in real estate. They were tech workers. They were just raising a lot of money and buying a lot of deals. Now, not all, but a lot of these failing operators had no real business being in the real estate industry at the scale that they're able to scale it so quickly. So let's transition and talk about how we are as positioning ourselves at RSN. So, you know, our backgrounds are generally in real estate. My background's in structural engineering. Ben's background has grown up in the real estate development world. We aren't suffering from any distress as an operator. We have held firm on our underwriting standards. I mentioned earlier, we've done 25 deals over 10 years. That's 2.5 deals a year. We are in the slow and steady wins the race. We have seen other operators. Hey guys, this is a quick ad for our latest multifamily investment opportunity called the Avalon Apartments, located in Dallas, Texas, the fastest growing MSA in the nation. Now, rapid fire, here are the three reasons why we love this asset. Firstly, great investor returns of over 20% annualized. The second thing, of the 226 units, 30% have already been renovated and they're achieving a $250 rental premium. Now, our business plan is pretty simple. We'll come in and renovate the remaining 70% to achieve those proven rental levels, then rely on a modest 3% rent growth thereafter. It's very conservative, very straightforward, and the same thing we have been doing successfully for over a decade. Now, last thing, pricing for multifamily apartment properties have fallen more today than they did during the 2008 global financial crisis. This could very well be the best time in commercial real estate cycle to pick up cheap assets. If you're interested to find out more, click on the link below. Starting to cut back on their staff or even potentially close up shop, where on our side, we're looking to continue our path forward of sustainable growth. We think it's a great time to be buying right now. It is, but in saying that, it is impossible to be unscathed in this industry after what we've seen in the last 2 years. And while our portfolio is stable and strong and well-performing, we do have one asset that has required a capital call. And because of debt-related issues, we've had huge success with that capital call. But it's on a great trajectory. With that being said, we can't tell you how much dealing with distressed assets is a huge time burden, and restructuring your business because of operator distress is even worse. And so every second you spend on these matters is time not spent generating strong returns and continuing to push rents for our investors. But we're in a really, really strong position as an operator to capitalize on this market distress. And we're going to talk a lot more in detail about this in a later section. But for now, we unfortunately have to speak about what I've already spoken about earlier. And the fact is that in this market, there's operator distress, and operator distress inevitably means investor distress. And we hate to see investor distress, but as I mentioned earlier, there is blood in the street right now. And I'm being contacted by owners trying to get me to help them out of some sticky situations. And we continue to see many deals transacting today where equity has been completely wiped out. Now, like anything, distress brings massive amounts of opportunities. And we're actively in pursuit of two deals right now that, if awarded, we will sell at significant discounts to where they traded for 2 or 3 years ago. So be on the lookout for those offerings first and foremost. But the deals we're actively chasing today, and as you can see here, all of them, and this is just a small fraction of the deals we have underwritten and the deals that I have personally toured, have all been purchased within the last 3 years and are now selling at prices significantly less than what they paid for them, with the majority of these deals having zero equity in the deal. Now, this is the type of info you can't get from the Real Deal. You can't get from CoStar right now. You only get that from walking assets, from touring assets, from kicking the tires with the brokers about why sellers are being forced to sell today. Now, I will say some of these deals are valued, in our opinion, less than the value of the debt. And we're seeing many of these deals come to market, but then being pulled off the market again because the lender doesn't want to take a short sale. Now, we believe this is only a matter of time before the penny drops on the lender's side as well. And up until this point, over the last 12 to 18 months, the lenders have also been pretending. If operators can't raise money to continue, you know, to prolong the deal, then the lenders also have to come to a fact that they're going to have to lose some money as well and be forced to take a loss. Now, again, a few of these deals on this slide are with very reputable operators, who I'm not going to mention, but according to the brokers, they have multiple deals in multiple states where the equity has been completely wiped out. And this is not something you wish upon anyone, but it is the reality that we're seeing today. So with investor distress, obviously, there's many ways it can come out. There's obviously multiple capital calls. Investors, you know, potential distributions may be paused to keep more money on hand to save for, you know, extensions or rate caps. We are seeing assets being worth less today, as I mentioned, and potentially equity could be underwater. And deals are being forced into sale because the operator may not be able to buy more time. They may have too many deals on their books that are burning that they need to just get rid of them. So they've been forced into a sale. We're also seeing some zombie deals that they never are going to be make a meaningful return, and the operator knows it, but they're keeping it, you know, barely alive and on the books so it doesn't impact their track record. And we're also seeing the hope and pray deals, which is, you know, extend and pretend. But with that said, let's talk about how we as RSN are moving forward. So we do see the next few years as a generational buying opportunity in the multifamily market. And you'll be watching us put our own money where our mouth is and actively doing everything we can to capitalize on the situation for our investor base, which are you guys on this call, and for our own families as well. Now, we are true believers in sustainable growth. As I mentioned earlier, we are comfortably equipped to acquire between 4 and 6 deals a year whilst maintaining the strong core business operation, which is asset management, construction management, and investor relations. That's what we do well. And we're not trying to scale unpredictably. You're not going to see us scale too rapidly. So we are focused on true sustainable growth. And unfortunately, many of our operators who we are seeing in distress today are as a result of scaling too quickly. Now, in saying that, in order to win 4 to 6 deals a year, we have sat down and mathematically determined that we needed to review at least 700 deals this year in order to achieve that goal. We obviously have to widen the net of assets that we can target for acquisitions. Now, a big part of this is underpinned by bringing on a highly powered, our new CIO, Chief Investment Officer, Christian Macellari. Now, Christian is a veteran of the industry, and he's on this call tonight with almost $1 billion in acquisitions in just the last few years. And he has been instrumental in defining our new go-forward acquisition strategy in conjunction with, you know, him hitting the proverbial pavement and drumming up incredible opportunities for all of us here, including you guys as investors. Now, as a part of this enhanced acquisition strategy, we'll be actively moving into new markets, right? Because we can't underwrite 700 deals in three markets. but we're going to be doing that in a targeted and controlled fashion. And Christian has incredibly deep experience in the Florida market. And so that is the first market we are going to expand into outside of the five markets we're already in today. In addition to widening our selection of target markets, we're also going to begin to target core and core plus assets in addition to our historical pedigree of the classic value add strategy. The final pillar of our strategy is to bolster our access to investment capital so that we can target high value assets. And this will be a combination of partnering up with potential institutional equity and family offices, but also continuing to offer you guys, our investor base, an opportunity to invest alongside of us on all of our deals as we move forward. Now, lastly, we are betting on interest rates to drop. Let's make no qualms about it. But we're going to remain as conservative as we can and continue. We believe we need to continue to use fixed rate agency debt as the best tool to move forward. Now, some think they may be too conservative in a reducing interest rate environment, but adhering to this strategy, we're protected from the very low likelihood, but a high impact scenario if rates start going against the market prediction and start climbing higher. And now anything can happen over the next 5 to 7 years, just on that slide that Ben showed before. A lot of things have happened in the last 5 years, but we want to play it as safe as we possibly can because we don't have a crystal ball. Now, we'll always retain the option to do a refinance or sell our assets with assumable debt. So, in conclusion, before we get into the Q&A, let's bring it back to the main theme of tonight. It's the state of the market. Make no bones about it. It has been a rough 2 years for the multifamily market. However, the fundamentals driving multifamily are stronger than ever. This is combined with falling rates, places this market what we see as a great generational buying opportunity today. Additionally, the competitive landscape has dramatically changed for the industry. And a lot of our competitors who are struggling to stay afloat may have been forced to close up shop or just halt new acquisitions altogether because they're dealing with too many fires internally. Now, in closing, we'll summarize that we have said this about the state of the market. We think right now is a great time to buy. Deal volume is picking up. There is a lot of capital flowing in, and we're seeing this as a generational buying opportunity. We are super excited about the next couple of years. We'll keep putting deals together in front of you guys and heavily investing in our own capital alongside all of you as we continue to present opportunities to you all. But with that being said, we'd like to thank you for joining our webinar tonight and the state of the market for June of 2024. And we're going to now transition into some live Q&A. So the first one is about how are you accessing distressed operators? Well, it's not about the access to distressed operators. It's about being known in the industry, right? We constantly are attending seminars. We're constantly, you know, I have a weekly podcast that I've been doing for a decade. I interview a lot of other operators. We're active buyers. We bought deals in the last 12 months. So we know who is transacting. And we are being reached out directly by those buyers in the active markets that we're in to help them out. And Christian, who's also on the webinar tonight, he has a whole strategy around reaching out directly to buyers who he knows that could be in distress by one, looking at their debt information on CoStar. Right. Two, being methodical that it's a numbers game. It's not just going to happen. You know, you're not going to hit a home run by blasting out a bunch of emails in 1 week and never doing it again. It's about the consistency of continuing to follow up. So overall, it's a combination of being known in the industry, plus doing some new things around, you know, guerrilla marketing to really try and unlock those opportunities that might exist out there. So hopefully that answers your question, Anthony. Where was the one property needing assistance? What was the root cause and lessons learned? So the one asset is in Phoenix. It is a private asset, so we're not going to get too deep into the details. But the same thing that everyone has faced, it was floating rate debt and, you know, rate caps and all that sort of stuff. So fundamentally, it wasn't an asset problem. It was a debt problem. And we've been able to resolve that with our lender and with our investors. And it's the only deal we have across the 25 that's causing us a problem. So hopefully that answers that question. Anthony's asking again, in your underwriting, do you have any non-starters? Yeah, the non-starters that have come up more recently, particularly in COVID, is we're really, really focused on the demographics. So as we expand into new markets, particularly markets that Christian has been very familiar with, and I'll say that our history has been in Central Texas, Arizona, and the Carolinas, and parts of Atlanta. Christian has been in Florida, right? And so we have really honed in to say, okay, within a 2-mile radius, we want to make sure that the average household income, besides the fact that population is growing and we're in a growth market, but we also want to see that there's a minimum household income, an average household income of over $60,000. If we don't see that within 2 miles, we're not going to invest. Now, that will depend on certain situations. If we're buying a new build or coming out of construction, and it might be an expanding area, we may skirt those lines. But by and large, if we're buying an existing property, 80s vintage, 90s vintage, we really, really, really want to be buying with the average household income above $65,000. On the one hand, you forecast prices will rise, but you also cite the distress that will cause deep discounts. How do you reconcile these two predictions? There's a difference, right? So we're believing we're at the bottom of the cycle, approaching the bottom. And so it's in comparison to where we pick that up. So if you're judging from when the height of the market of 2022, there's been a discount to that right now. Some will argue that those heights were inflated, right? And you've got to sort of get rid of that data and say, like, what really were the prices in late 2019 or early 2020? And we think over time that the value of an asset is driven by rents. And if rents, like we said earlier, if rents are going to continue to increase, like they have done over the last 70 years, the NOI will continue to increase and, we'll be able to increase the value of the asset. The other thing, I think back to one of the underwriting questions, we're continuing to expand cap rates on exit. We've been doing that from day one, but with fixed rate interest debt on the property is another reason. So we're trying to say that we're buying in today's market at a 5.5 or 6 cap, we'll be selling it in a 6.5 cap environment, so a worse environment in 5 years' time. And that's a way to sort of predict where we're going to be over the next 5 years. So hopefully that answers that question. Can you describe a sample profile of a core plus asset you'd pursue an investor return target as such an asset? So Christian, I don't know if you, I know you weren't planning on speaking, but maybe we could throw this one over to you as a bit of a curveball. Do you have, in terms of, we could look at Bahama Bay, which is a deal that we're looking at right now, which we compared both a value add strategy versus a core plus strategy. So do you want to talk a little bit about the differences in investor returns?
Sure, not a problem. And happy to be here. Thanks for having me join. So typically, core plus is really kind of, the first thing to define what core plus is the vintage of the asset. So generally speaking, we're looking at assets that, let's call it, are within the later stage of the 90s all the way up to about 2016. That's generally speaking, from a vintage perspective, what we would consider to be core plus. With respect to, the type of strategy and how it differs from value add, generally speaking, value add, you're not only looking at older vintages, but you're going to have a deeper lift as far as the repositioning of the asset. So, your budget for renovating these units on a value add, could be anywhere from $12,000 to $15,000 per unit. Whereas on a core plus, you're requiring less of a lift because you've got newer finishes. So you may be just doing light upgrades, or in the industry, we call it a light value add. So that's, from a strategy perspective. And then the returns, of course, are going to be slightly more muted than they would be for a value add, lift. So, where you may see assets in San Antonio traditionally, where you've got value add repositioning and you see $200 to $300 or $150 to $200, rent premiums. you know, the capital that you're spending per unit is going to be less, and also the rent premiums are going to be slightly muted. Generally speaking, we're solving for a net 15%, 14 to 15% IRR over a five-year period when we're dealing with core plus assets versus the 17 or 18% that you might see on a value add, you know, strategy for those reasons. And one last thing, from an economics perspective, generally value add assets tend to have, and you know, a lower price per door than you would see, you know, in the same exact market. You know, I'll pick on San Antonio. If you were to look at an asset in San Antonio for value add, you might see between $100,000 and $110,000 a door, and perhaps on a core plus, you're paying $135,000 to $145,000 per door because it's a newer vintage asset, right? And there's less lift, so obviously the seller is going to require a higher, you know, kind of ticket price in order to acquire it. So hopefully that answers.
Yeah, and the other thing to add there is you also have to look at risk-adjusted returns, right? In an 80s or 70s vintage asset, on paper, there might be $150 or $200 rental premiums, right? And that produces a, you know, a upper teen type of return. But you also have got to layer on the risk, which is the risk-adjusted part of it, of how are your tenant base going to perform with an increase of $250, if that's what the assumption is, right? I'm just pulling something out of thin air. And you have to, as operators, we've operated enough for the past decade to know that it might make more sense that you may not achieve those rental premiums in certain demographic areas because of the higher inflationary environment. So, you know, delinquency might be higher. You need to underwrite for that. That might, you know, do you want that? Do you want those bigger premiums with more delinquency, or do you want more of a stable premium with less delinquency? And so those are the trade-offs you have to also understand. The newer product that's being built will have 9-foot ceilings. It will have sprinklers, right, in the interior. So insurance will be down. There's a whole gambit of reasons why you choose to buy certain asset classes. But if it goes back to what I mentioned earlier, is we are really focusing on the non-starters that someone asked earlier was, we've got to see $60,000 to $65,000 within a 2-mile radius, average household income. If it's in the 40s or 50s, we don't want to touch it. We know it's going to be trouble. We know it's going to be, you know, higher delinquency, and we just don't. We've done that work over the past decade. Now it's about trying buying nicer quality assets, and we may hold them for longer. So I hope that answers that question. Anthony PRC again, what's a healthy expense ratio? Well, Anthony, I'm going to ask. 50, rule of thumb is 50%, but depends on the state in which you're in. And why I say that is because Arizona, for example, has really, really low real estate taxes. So their expense ratio is going to be lower than, say, Texas. Texas has they have no income tax on income for the average American or the average worker, but they get you through real estate tax. So you might see an expense ratio on those 55, maybe upwards of 60% range in Texas versus 35 or 40% in Arizona. So you have to really understand where the real estate taxes are, because that really does drive what is so-called a good expense ratio. But rule of thumb, 50% is in the multifamily industry. So hopefully that answers that question. Do you think about the impact of some black swan events, such as disorderly US election cycle or heightened tensions bordering upon World War III due to Middle East conflict? Yeah, look, we've seen that, right? We've had two wars break out in the last 5 years. We've had COVID. We've had SVB. I'm trying to think of stuff. We've had a lot already. We're all probably jaded in the last 5 years. They're going to be things we can't control, right? And so at the end of the day, we have to be disciplined. We are investors, and we want to continue to put money on the street every single year. And that risk adjust, the average investor return over a long 20-year period, we'll be doing just fine. And the big black swan events are going to happen, and we will prepare as best we can from them. But they're also black swan events for a reason, because we can't see them coming. So, you know, we'll continue to underwrite, you know, conservatively, continue to look to buy good deals. We'll continue to, you know, invest in affordable deals, because we think affordability is still a massive issue. And for all those reasons, I think you're going to be just fine over the long term. I will say that something we haven't really spoken about is that we've also seen a bit of a readjustment back to some fundamentals of real estate, which is that real estate is a medium to long-term investment. Now, we have produced at RSN doubled people's money in 3 years. It's been crazy. I mean, that's because of the market. But, you know, you look at history, if you are doubling your money in a 5 to 7 year period, you're doing just fine. And we're seeing a shift back to that type, that type of investing. The last 10 years won't be the same as the next 10 years. And so understanding that and how that fits into your portfolio, your diversified portfolio, is really important as you make decisions as investors. So we at RSN would love any allocation to real estate, us to be a provider of those real estate investments in the commercial space. So just want to quickly touch on that as well.
And I'll jump in here. What a great question. I would really like to talk about this question for like 20 minutes, but we'll run out of time. But this is the way my brain thinks, as you know, Reid can attest to. I'm constantly thinking about different risks that could come up and how do we hedge things. You know, we're conservative by nature, and at the end of the day, it just doesn't make sense to hedge against all these different kinds of tail risks. If you start trying to hedge against every different possible scenario, you're going to end up just being overly conservative or not able to move or having some kind of deal that just doesn't make sense. And you also got to think like, you know, a disorderly election cycle, as horrible as that would be, you can't see that persisting for a 5 to 7 year period. You know, now on the other hand, if we have like a China, Taiwan, US war, I mean, realistically, bets are off. And that's exactly the kind of like tail risk that is low risk, incredibly high impact. But you can't really model any investment around that scenario. You know, the fundamentals of real estate is people always need shelter, people always need a place to live. But it's going to be challenging times no matter what you're doing with your investment dollars if some of those really, you know, nasty risks come to bear. Anyway, great question. I'd love to talk about that all night.
One of the questions we've got here is how are you modeling future growth rates in insurance, particularly in the Florida market? It's a very good question, right? We believe that coming into the Florida market, and given Christian's experience, and Christian, I'll let you, chime in here whenever you see fit, but across, even if I take Texas, for example, I've been investing in Texas since 2014. The average insurance there back in the day was $250 a door. That's what you could sort of hang your hat on. Today, that's about $1,200 a door in Central Texas. And we've gone and we've owned assets through the Texas winter freeze, and we've had older vintage assets had problems. We've had newer vintage assets have problems. So right now, we're penciling around the $1,200 to $1,500 a door with about a 5% growth per year thereafter. Christian, I don't know if you want to add anything to that in terms of the insurance market in Florida specifically.
Sure. Yeah. Let me address it also from a different perspective. Each market in Florida is different. So, you can't kind of really look at it all the same way. Central Florida is generally going to be, depending upon certain factors, as Reid mentioned, 12 to 15, maybe 1600. Coastal towns are going to be higher. But one thing that we're doing is we're going through an internal risk mitigation strategy. I don't know how much I'm going to go into that, but basically we're looking at the ability to basically price insurance risk through a master policy program that should allow us to get much lower and competitive rates compared to standalone policies like most of our competitors are doing. So if you look at most indicators, they're not actually using master policies. So that's an exercise we're going through. And the biggest thing that's different, to Reid's point, in Texas, where you have similar insurance rates to where you have in Florida, the big differentiator is that you have higher rents in Florida. So when you actually look at the expense ratio, going back to an earlier question, generally speaking, for core plus deals, you're going to see between a 38 and 42% expense ratio. And it's not that the taxes are much different than they are in Texas or the insurance rates, it's that the rents are much higher. And frankly, we're seeing more of a cap rate decompression in Florida. The deals that we're looking at for Core Plus, we're looking at buying with in-place 6 caps. So having that cushion allows us to be able to absorb a higher insurance cost when you combine all these different factors together, including a master policy, to be able to reduce the insurance costs versus our competitors, for example.
Great answer. We're going to take one last question here from Bruce. How material costs for value add assets changed in the first 6 months? Has inflation slowed down? Inflation has definitely slowed down. Part of the reason, if you do or don't know this, we buy our own materials from Asia. We've been doing that for the past 10 years. So we've locked in our pricing, and we're already getting massive discounts on those pricing to the general public because we're buying in mass. We've also been able to lock in relatively good labor costs with our general contractors across all our deals. So, you know, it's not necessarily about an increase in material costs because we've been able to lock that in, part of the bulk supplying that we've been doing. But we've actually seen more of we haven't really seen a massive year-on-year growth from a labor cost, because when we do our labor, you know, our contracts with our general contractor, we try and set standards for a studio turn, a one-bedroom turn, a two-bedroom turn. And, you know, we obviously have to meet our budget, but we're also not nickeling and diming that general contractor. You know, we're driving him down to a price that is reasonable, and then he can do it at scale, and we can produce, you know, a sort of a conveyor belt of turns and renovations at pace. And, you know, having that set standard of a price from day one, you know, most of our GCs haven't come back to us and said, you know, well, we need a 20% increase. We see typically 2 to 3% increases on those contracts over a 12 to 24 month period. So by and large, we haven't seen crazy amounts. We have seen, you know, on the property management side, you know, I will say, looking back, an average $20, $30 million property could have had a $50,000 or $45,000 property manager in place. Today, that same property manager wants $65,000. That same maintenance tech doesn't want $19 an hour. They want $25 an hour. So on stuff we can control, we are trying to control as best as we can. But on the property management side, we're definitely seeing that be an issue. So that is something we're having to contend with and have to underwrite for. And you know, that's just, you know, doing 110 deals already in the first 6 months. We're getting very, very good at what, you know, those sort of payroll numbers are. And again, if I look back 10 years ago, those payroll numbers today, we might be underwriting to $1,600 a door across most, you know, most markets. 10 years ago, that was $1,000 a door, $1,100 a door. So, but guess what's also gone up? You know, average rents 10 years ago were $850 for a two bedroom in most, you know, secondary markets. Today they're $1,400, $1,500. So, you know, everything has gone up, and it goes back to that graph we showed over the past 70 years that rent will continue to go up as cost of living continues to go up. So with that being said, we've got 3 minutes left. Ben, do you want to quickly round us out for the evening?
Sure. Look, I mean, thanks so much for joining, guys. It's been a great session. There are a couple of questions that we're not going to get to. We'll try to hit you up after the call. And thanks so much for joining, guys. We really appreciate it. Christian, Reed, thanks for joining, guys.
Be well, and we will chat soon. And keep your eyes peeled for new deals as we launch them in the next couple of weeks.